Mark, I think many pilots in this scenario, especially at home airport, would be very much inclined to pressing on. What is it that drew you to the choice to delay, time out, and really catch up a little bit?
Well, you know, I agree with you that most pilots would, and that's why when I spoke about it, I said, you know, those choices are very, very tempting and become much, much more tempting if it's your home base where you really know it. Of course, at Erie, at your home base, you would rarely find traffic just puttering around a pattern when the conditions are almost IFR, because that tends to be an area where it's the visibilities and clouds are unlimited. But here, especially when you have a traffic pattern on the west side, where conflicting traffic in the pattern doesn't mean merging and being on the opposite side of the runway, but being directly opposite it, and you've got winds that are telling you as the pilot that's not the way to go, that you're confused enough and concerned enough, and at least I would be, to say, look, I need to figure out exactly what's going on there before popping out of a cloud with another 172 facing me.
You know, I'm looking at the approach plate here, and I got to admit, I'm not seeing a huge problem with choice three, right? So from the step down, you've got to lose 700 feet, roughly, and you've got 2 miles to do it. You're on the opposite side of all traffic at the airport because you're coming in from the east side and all the traffic's on the west side. To my mind, doesn't that put you in a position where you're on the opposite side from all the traffic, so you're not going to have a traffic conflict? You're looking at the airport across the runway. You can identify the other targets. If you find them both, see the pattern, you should be in a position to be able to either cross midfield and enter or cross on a crosswind and join and enter and follow in behind. Or if it doesn't make visual sense right away, you're still in a position to commence the missed approach and go back to the choice you had. So I'm wondering if that, you know, to my mind, it can still put you in a position where you could drop below the clouds, assess, without really putting yourself in a position of danger, still be able to fly the missed approach over the traffic that's there.
To me, Jeff, the traffic is not the bigger issue here. To me, the potential of landing with a tailwind presents, I think, a lot of danger. It's a 4,700-foot long runway at high altitude, and I definitely don't want that quartering tailwind. So I have to go with Mark's choice to go around and definitely sort out the winds to make sure I've got that right, and, of course, the traffic issue.
Although I think 98% of the pilots are going to continue into the pattern and land, there are some other considerations here. The fact that this traffic is proceeding contrary to what we expected as we approach the airport says that there's something wrong here, and you need to resolve that. Now, depending on the airport, these airplanes may be operating with a tailwind. I've seen that many times. The wind is shifting around, and the instructors in the pattern with their students just say, we'll continue this. This is good practice for you to see what it's like to land with a tailwind. Now, if you've got a hot airplane and you're landing at an airport with a 2,500-foot runway, that could be an issue for you to fall into the pattern behind this traffic. It could set you up for a little bit of an overrun problem.
You know, I think there's no, you know, you don't want to mistake the level of this distraction. I mean, you have it's 180 degrees from what you were expecting. As a pilot, we have expectations, you know, and your expectations were, you know, the winds are from here, the weather is at here, and you just have a wow. And so you have gone from being ahead of your airplane to behind your airplane. Now, depending upon the pilot in the seat, some pilots can make up that distance, you know, very, very quickly. But I think for most of us, there's going to be a delay there that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable. I still think this approach, given that you actually would drop out of the clouds and be on the side of the airport where you get to see the situation, and even, I appreciate what you said about the winds, Wally, but let's suppose I come out of the clouds, I'm now looking across the runway, I see the other two aircraft in the pattern, I still haven't seen a windsock, I still don't know why they're going that way. I'm in a position to join behind them, and now I've got an entire downwind to look for windsock and information visually on the runway, even all the way to final, right? And I will have dropped out of the clouds, it's going to happen potentially earlier, let's suppose the weather, right, is better because what happened was we were actually looking at old weather. That's why we had this mistake. And I realized, oh, this airport's actually VFR and it's my home field. I don't see that as a problem. I think that's enough time for a lot of people to be able to go, okay, something was wrong, but I'm going to join the existing traffic. I can see the winds actually are favoring 3-3. Let me pull in and land.
I think the difficulty for the pilot in this scenario is, remember, he's taking advantage of very rare actual instrument conditions in the area. So the distraction that we all feel when transitioning from the gauges to visual references is going to be much, much more severe for this particular pilot than for somebody who, for example, flies regularly in IMC, breaks out, and has to merge with traffic. And I think that extra consideration for this pilot is a very good reason to say, wait a minute, let's take a moment, time out, let's regroup.
And quite frankly, you know, do you presume VFR weather just because there's traffic in the pattern? You know, we all know that, you know, there's people that press the limits out there. And Jeff, I think your decision to proceed is a presumption that, you know, you're going to break out at a logical altitude where all of this, you know, shows up for you. And if that doesn't happen, well, now you're way behind the eight ball and borderline dangerous with other airplanes in the vicinity. And you don't, quite frankly, don't know where they are.
You're right, Bob. There could be aircraft operating in the Class G airspace below 700 AGL. It's possible. But this brings up the question of whether we have obtained all available information. Do we have current weather? Well, we have data link weather, a download. Is that current weather? Well, this airport has automated weather and probably should have made a point of getting that weather to find out really what's going on. The data link weather is good for planning. It gave us something to work with. We got an idea of what was going on. But due to the time delays and the, as you pointed out, Mark, the parameters or the protocols for issuance, generation and issuance of that weather, that might not really be current. And there's a better source here, that being the automated weather.
Bob, you bring up a very, very interesting what if. Okay, you decide to press on. You have a near miss, you know, with these other airplanes, and now we have an event. And there you are. This is being investigated. And our friends from the FAA ask you if you used all of the information that was available to you as required by the FARs. How would you plead?
You'd probably plead not guilty until they begin to ask some more questions and find that you used old and out-of-date data link weather.
Yeah,
and
you don't have much of a leg to stand on.
I think what you have is the problem that any of these things, after there is an incident, after there is that near miss, once the FAA comes a-calling and starts looking at the situation, they're really Monday morning quarterbacking. And it's very, very hard to say how that's all going to pan out. Certainly, if you tune in the AWOS or the ASOS and you get the current weather, you've got the current weather. Well, does that mean you have to keep radio number two on all the time in case that changes in the next 20 or 30 seconds? And I think that's going to be one of the questions. We can always say, well, they should have had this more current weather, but how far do you carry that?
There's a question of reasonableness, I think, and what would the prudent pilot do? And I don't think you'd keep the AWOS on. You'd get it as you approach the pattern and consider that to be current weather. Right. It's current enough.
I also think that going back to the pre-flight portion of it, when you know you talked about how rare it is to get any instrument conditions in that Rocky Mountain area, which should also be a tip-off to the pilot to really look at the weather. Why is there instrument conditions? It has to be some sort of system or something. And the TAF does talk about a wind change during the day. It came sooner. So you should be mentally prepared for a change in conditions also. And that goes back to getting all the available information. It shouldn't have been a surprise that there was a wind change.
Or as Bob said, when there was a surprise, that should have been the cue to go back and say, what's wrong with my information? Yeah. One of the things we haven't talked about is in this scenario, this pilot is flying with his tablet, finally with ADS-B weather and traffic for the first time. And it's great. And we've all had that experience. But there are limitations to it. And even when we're talking about preparing the scenario, you know, I had to call an expert because I didn't have the information on this, and it was a learning experience, I think, for me, that the data, the ADS-B data that you're getting for weather isn't simple. You know, the easy takeaway is to say, well, if the data is 5 minutes old, it's 5 minutes old. But if you're looking at the data on your tablet, it could be 20 minutes old, it could be an hour old. We had to do some research to find out how it goes into the system, and it's complicated. It's like if it's an ASOS, it updates every hour into the system. If it's an AWOS, it normally updates every 20 minutes into the system. Those get brought up and pumped out to the towers every 5 to 10 minutes. So you really got to look at that timestamp on your tablet, and if it's old information that you're getting, that should be a flag to you that, hey, I got to verify what this is.
Another question that I think is needs to be looked at here, Mark, you alluded to it in your expert response, but I think it bears some focus, is, you know, what are we going to see when we break out on an instrument approach? And quite frankly, it takes some time to transition from the instruments to the visual and proceed logically then to complete the landing. Because if you are distracted or you're not where you expected to be, once again, you're behind, and that distraction may cause you to, you know, to get yourself in a fix. Mark, you want to address that a little bit more?
Well, I think that's a very significant problem, because you're coming into a traffic pattern where there is other traffic. You're at a non-towered airport, so it's not like airspace is being cleared for you in any way. And here, of course, you would have the additional problem of the traffic being opposite what you expect. Now, I mean, what you do have here that we really didn't talk about is he does have a safety pilot with him. So he could probably be on the gauges himself and telling his safety pilot, your job is to look for the traffic. That's why you're here to begin with. And that might ameliorate the situation. But it's still a very significant problem, and I'm going to stick with my initial response, which is, you know, it's time to take that time out, figure out what's going on. I think there is a tendency to have missionitis come along at various points in a flight. And, you know, you're so close to landing, you're so close to your home base, you're so close to the runway. What a temptation to just continue on and see, well, you know, I know this area, so let's just continue on and see what happens. And those are really the times that you sort of have to sit back and say, is that really, really the right decision?
I agree with you, Mark. I'm going to say something that I've said here before, and that is the philosophy that I try to instill in instrument flying, and that is, if everything isn't perfect at the final approach fix, don't go down, go up. Or if things are going wrong when you're on your way down from the final approach fix, go up. You won't get hurt going up. And I think here, certainly there were some things that weren't correct at the final approach fix. So I've got to stick with the go-up theory rather than go down.
And you're out practicing approaches anyhow. What's the harm of another miss?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's that for sure.
You know?
Hey, that's why we're actually out here doing this. Although you are going to end up going back into the situation again.
Yeah, but
now, at least you now expect it.
Right. Now you have the knowledge, or at least the puzzle has been solved, or hopefully it's been solved.
Well, it gives us a good chance to look at the whole concept of a timeout. For those that have practiced CRM and have integrated into their flying, it's natural, it's comfortable. But I think many pilots don't use it as a tool. But what a valuable tool. I mean, let's look at upside, downside. Okay, it delays you 5, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. Well, how often are 5 or 10 minutes going to ruin or destroy a flight versus proceeding and leading yourself, you know, further and further, you know, on a bad path? So the concept of a timeout whereby you regroup, take as much time as necessary, and once again, depending upon your skill level, your experience, your background, it may take you a while. This may totally fluster you. It may be a big distraction and lead to a big problem. It may be a small problem where you find out from one of the airplanes in the traffic, yeah, we're VFR here. Okay, I'll press on. So, but having that tool available and being ready to use it whenever it's necessary, I think is a very, very important concept to pass along.
Getting back to the situation here, and as I said earlier, I think 98% of the pilots would proceed into the pattern in some fashion. This airplane's been aloft for an hour and a half, and I think there's going to be an impulse to land at this point. I think those are the facts here in terms of what's going to push this airplane into the pattern.
You know, you actually brought up a good point there, Bob, about the you could radio in. We didn't even mention that one thing you could do once you switched over to CTAF is call the other airplanes in the pattern and say, you know, what are the current winds and why are you guys landing 3-3 or what are the flight conditions there? And then they say, oh, it's, you know, 1,200-foot ceilings now and light wind, you know, out of the north. Oh, well, okay, and now I understand what's going on. Now I know I'm going to break out earlier. Now I know where they are.
Another CRM, you know, concept, using all available information, including somebody that's there. Let's talk, too, about this concept of VFR-IFR mix. You know, we're on the approach. Do we not think that gives us some sort of priority if we're on the straight in? But if you're in the pattern and you hear somebody on the straight in or on the approach, you know, what do you think? Get in line, you know. So, you know, where you are, you know, in the flow, you know, causes you to look at this. And we need to appreciate that. And another reason to communicate with those other airplanes and announce your intentions. If you're a VFR, and physically announce your intentions. You know, I'm 5 miles southeast. If you say you're at a instrument fix, that doesn't help a VFR pilot that doesn't have a clue what that is exactly.
You know, so a good takeaway here for this pilot, it was a great learning experience. It wasn't a particularly dangerous situation, and that's why he was out practicing with new equipment, and we need to do that. One of the questionable choices may be whether you do that in actual IMC, but these aren't even really bad conditions. But he learned in doing this a very real limitation of this fantastic cockpit technology that comes in. It's terrific. But until you find the places where it can catch you, you know, it, like so many things, can lull you into a sense of complacency. And even here around the table, we ourselves had to go check, and as we created this scenario, well, how does the data work on ADS-B, and how often does it update? And we had different perceptions of how it would be, and now we're all the wiser for it just for going through this exercise. So I think, you know, that's the real takeaway from a situation like this.